Welcome to the Fan Pregame, Ailish and Justin. We're pregaming a big night on the network tonight. Leafs get their first home game of the series hosting Boston tonight at 7 p.m. LA and Edmonton part two of that doubleheader up at 10 o'clock across Sportsnet, plus Vegas and Dallas at 9:30 on Sportsnet 360.
Three big games tonight, and we've got Edmonton and Toronto, as mentioned, so we landed on a nice little cross-section, at least I think. Dallas Eakins, who spent time with both organizations, will join us in a moment to discuss, what's going on in both Toronto and Edmonton.
We'll have Kristen Shilton hop on around 6:30 from Scotiabank Arena, so hopefully by then we'll know the latest on Willie Nylander. He might or might not be out for warm-ups at that time, so we'll get an up-to-the-minute update from her and her take on the series.
And big Blue Jays news. Addison Barger, MLB debut tonight in Kansas City. Our boy Mike Malott has a fight. We'll get to the fight news involving Sportsnet's own. And, of course, best bets in the middle of our show. Rundown everything that's going on in the betting world.
Okay, 7 o'clock will be the start of the Maple Leafs home ice tenure here in this series. Now, the playoffs started with a lot of home wins. Game one was mostly home winners. I think Dallas was the only team that ruined that streak. Mm-hmm. But we've seen all the Canadian cities get their moment to host a Canadian playoff hopeful, Stanley Cup hopeful. Tonight, Toronto will get theirs. Of course, they've had the Maple Leaf Square for the last little while, but they're going to have their opportunity to have home ice advantage. But we were just talking about this prepping for the show, and the Leafs have not been great at home. Obviously, the regular season's one thing, but in the postseason, 6-13 in the last 5 years, they've lost four in a row. The last time they hosted a home playoff game was the time they were eliminated by Florida. They lost that game five to Tampa with a chance to advance. They lost a game seven to Tampa the year before, seven to Montreal. And so you don't need to go through the playoff history. But home ice advantage should mean something. It should be an exciting thing. And the Maple Leafs kind of get an opportunity to stop that slide tonight.
Yeah, it's definitely there's going to be something that they have to address, right? Like, you can't have success in the playoffs without, you know, having success.
You got to win at home.
At home. And it's not like compulsory. You don't need to dominate at home, but you got to at least hold your end of the bargain to a certain extent. And the Maple Leafs, as you mentioned, have failed to do that. I think that is an interesting thing, though, because they've been brutal at home all year. And why is that? What's the answer to that question? Is it overcoaching? Is it misuse of matchups? Is it too much of an attention to detail? Like, are you doing too much if you're Sheldon Keefe? Again, this is something they've probably been mulling over and contemplating for a long time, because this is a pattern, this is a trend, this is not a new thing. But certainly the Maple Leafs have got to figure out why they're having more success on the road, that playoff failures have happened so often at home. And I guess we get to see the start of that tonight. But that's the thing about the Maple Leafs in the playoffs. Like, if you're going to buck trends, if you're going to have any success at all, you're bucking more than one trend. You're bucking trends. You're doing things completely different than you've done it in the past. So if this year is different under Treliving and with snot surrounding Austin Matthews and a bit of a different look all the way around, well, if everything's got to change, then maybe the home failures are going to have to change as well for the Maple Leafs to have success in this series and have success beyond that.
Yeah, it's an important one tonight. I don't know if you can circle one reason why the Maple Leafs haven't had success on home ice. You know, people love to say, oh, the Scotiabank Arena can be quiet at times. Well, not in the playoffs, I hope. You know, this is a big ticket. This is a big one tonight. And, of course, Saturday night, you want to give the fans something to cheer about early on. It's not their responsibility to ignite your passion. I know I saw the towels out there today that got the passion towels. It's going to be exciting to see how Scotiabank Arena looks. And when you look at the history of the Maple Leafs at home ice, it's really got to stop. As you mentioned, it's never a series until a team loses at home. Well, we saw that with the split in Boston. You're coming into tonight. We don't know the updates on William Nylander. We don't know if he's playing or not, but it looks like Samsonov will get the start in Swayman. And so those are the two guys that should be starting in net for both teams. So it's all going to come down to who's going to be the bigger superstar. What a good night for somebody that's maybe been in the media and the headlines to reverse that trend, right? If it's a Mitch Marner sighting tonight, would that be the perfect time to do that on home ice, to stop the narrative that you're not showing up, that you're not doing enough in the playoffs? Tonight's a really big opportunity for the Maple Leafs to buck a lot of trends.
Yeah, certainly. And I guess the trends, or the most recent trends, would be, poor play from the second line, third line, the middle six not necessarily delivering what they need to not just win one game or in a split in Boston, but to, again, win a series, win multiple series. They're going to have more than just contributions from that top line, and it's going to require success at home primarily, or maybe just, you know, secondarily driven by the middle six. Let's get to our first guest, Dallas Eakins, former NHL head coach, both the Oilers and the Ducks, now working Adler Mannheim in the German League. Pleased to have you on, Dallas.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start with that one. We're just talking about the failures of the Maple Leafs at home recently. This comes in the playoffs. It also came during the regular season this year. And it's not supposed to go that way, right? Because there are certain advantages of playing at home. There are advantages of, like, you know, comfort of home, understanding the dressing room, the comforts of home generally just for the players. But also, yeah, the coach has a little bit more sway in matters. Do you think that this is maybe a problem with Toronto at home where, yeah, you got all these coaching tools at your disposal, but maybe you don't need to lean into that direction so hard? How do you balance that as a head coach, having the power and maybe using it too much?
Well, just on their struggles at home, first of all, like for me, one thing has nothing to do with the other. I would be really not talking about that much. I think the more you inject or talk about negativity, the more it grows. I would simply be looking at the task at hand. You know, the advantages of playing at home are more fan related than last change. Is it nice to have the last change and get who you want out on the ice? Absolutely. But the effect that your fans can have on the energy of the game, the way that they can push your team along when they're behind, when they can aid them in keeping momentum, which is huge in the playoffs, and their psychological effect on the referees. That's where the real home advantage lies.
One thing that we've been talking about this series is maybe the lack of adaptability or maybe the confidence levels that the Boston Bruins have had in their goaltending tandem, finding out that Jim Montgomery made the decision to start Swayman game one and to switch over for the second one with Ullmark. I wonder for you as a head coach in the past, like, have you ever been so either secure or maybe not adaptable enough that you've set something in stone 2 weeks out, especially as important as a goaltending tandem going into a playoffs where, you know, both your goaltenders are pretty strong, but that little change, it could mean a lot in a series.
Well, yeah, it is. These are big decisions. And believe me, behind closed doors, this wasn't just they walked in and grabbed Bob Asenza, the goalie coach, and said, hey, who do you want to start? And it's a 2-second conversation. Mm-hmm. Like these things are long conversations. They're very well thought. There will be a lot of different components into going into who is starting and who is not. But that's the great fun of sports, is to be able to second guess the coach, to, you know, what is he doing? Why would he switch? Why wouldn't he stay with this guy? Like, you know, that just comes with the territory. But the one thing that, I know for sure for me sitting on the outside is I'm not second guessing any of these coaches. They've had long chats with their staff. They've gone through the analytics. They've left no stone unturned when it comes to their lineup decisions. And they're going to do what they think is best for their team.
So, of course, there are many storylines emanating from this series. Boston and Toronto just two games in the first round here. The positive ones are the positive ones. The negative ones are I guess there's two primary ones, I would say. One of them being William Nylander, the sort of confusion around what his status is and his availability for the series. And the other one would be Mitch Marner and the fact that he's not having a great series to this point. There are a lot of conversations had around the city. There are articles being written and there are headlines and newspaper covers that are circulating around as well. Whether Mitch Marner is having a good series or not, I let's put that aside for just a moment. If he hears the noise, it's going to be something that affects a player like Mitch Marner, maybe more so than others. If there is that noise and you can feel it as a head coach around a certain player, what can you do as a head coach to make life easier for Mitch Marner?
Well, number one, talk about it. And you know what? It is amazing to me. It's just amazing to me that what challenges are in the game today for these players. You know, Mitch Marner is 1 point out of being number three in scoring on his team right now. And, you know, I understand the criticism that comes with being a pro athlete. But when you go, you said there's a couple of negative things, and that's what you want to keep out of your dressing room. For me, it's something that I'm sure Sheldon has been talking about this since day one of training camp, to keep out the noise, because I'm not a big, hey, keep it positive guy. If things are positive, then let's be positive. But if things aren't positive, let's be neutral. Like, let's just be neutral and deal with the task at hand. Because the thing I know for sure is that negativity, whether you read it, it's said to you, you overhear a negative conversation, it has an effect on you. And negativity will burn down a church, it'll kill an organization, and it'll certainly get you punted out of the playoffs. So I think it's really important to address it with the kid. I'm sure these conversations have been going on for a long, long time. And it's really important that for Mr. Marner to just concentrate on the task at hand, go play his game. He is a big time player. He's an excellent player in that league. And he just really needs to manage being neutral.
It's interesting, right? The management of narratives, of storylines, of players. I mean, that all rolls under the coach's job for sure. The other storyline is Nylander. And I guess there was a management of that story, right? And Sheldon Keefe, and you don't want to second guess Keefe, but I don't even think you need to go down that path, because you've had experience in a Canadian market where you've got to decide, I guess, in the back, how you're going to relay a message to people. Like, how much strategy goes into that as a head coach? Or are you just kind of, whatever information you have, you're delivering, or you're kind of going through the pros and cons of what is the best way to deliver information that you maybe not can be totally honest about, but you need to have some answers for?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. And again, this is something that coaches are thinking about a lot. Like, yeah, you're there to coach the team, but you are the messenger. You are the psychologist. A lot of times you're the captain too. And so there's a lot of thought on what's going on around your team and how you are going to deliver the message to the fans and to the press every day. Like, it's mandatory in the NHL that coach speaks every day. And you have to have a game plan on what you're going to say. And I'm really split on this. Like, sometimes I just think we should just come out and tell the truth. Hey, this guy's hurt. This is what it is. This is how long we think he's going to be out, and that's it. But I've been in the game a long time, and especially in these playoffs, I'm sorry. If you know what's wrong with the other guy, someone's going to take a shot at him, and you don't want that for your team. You don't want it. And so the other side of me is say as less as possible. Like, I don't think it, honestly, it's anybody's business what's wrong with Nylander. He's hurt. He's injured, because if he wasn't, he would be in the lineup. And he will be back when he's ready to play. It's as simple as that. So all the second guessing, when's he going to be back? Will he play tonight? What's wrong with him? Is it his head? Is it his back? Is it his baby toe? Who cares? It doesn't matter. He's injured. He's not ready to play. He'll be back when he's ready. And that's why it's a team, right? That provides opportunity for someone else to jump in there. And that's what makes great, great stories in the playoffs, are the teams that get beat up a little bit, but they're still able to have success.
He could be back as early as tonight. We're going to find out in probably about 20-ish minutes. We're talking to Dallas Eakins ahead of what's going to be a busy night in the NHL, Boston and Toronto at 7 o'clock, followed by LA and Edmonton at 10 o'clock on our doubleheader. So let's talk about those Oilers. Obviously a different level of playoff. Connor and Leon, we've already seen the success, and even in Zach Hyman. So when you're trying to contain a team like that, it can be pretty lopsided. What suggestions or how can the Kings contain two of the greatest superstars in the world when they have something so important to play for?
Can you lay six guys down in the net? I don't know. Like, they are so impressive. Like, that game was, it was amazing to me at just not the pace that Connor was playing at or Draisaitl, but their whole team. Mm-hmm. Like, the pace of the game was so high. And you know what? LA is a hard team to play against. They check as well as anybody in the league. Their play away from the puck is excellent. You know, Todd McClellan did one hell of a job there instilling a system that is just the fabric of that team. And it still lives there even without him. But that Oilers team, they are on a different level right now. And I think it is going to take a whole lot of luck, a whole lot of discipline for LA to have success in this series. The effect that Connor McDavid's habits on and off the ice, the way it's affected this team and where it's grown is super impressive. And I just really think that I think you're using the right word, contained. You're not going to stop them. You just got to try to really limit the damage that they can do. Now, where can they do it? On the power play, for sure. You can't take one penalty. And after that, you are literally trying to just get in front of these guys, take away their hands, take away their speed, just knock them off balance that little wee bit so that they don't have a whole lot of time and space to work with.
So the average fan gravitates to the Oilers because of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and the chance to see something incredible happen, right? Like, it's excellence, and we as sports fans kind of gravitate towards that excellence. Is it the same for coaches? Like, when you're just flipping around, when you're wanting to consume hockey, does it just like pique the coach's brain as well? Like, do you learn something? If maybe we're going for entertainment, you're going for information. You're watching Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. Are you picking up things, new things about the game as a coach because you're seeing two guys, or at least with Connor McDavid, one player do it better than, you know, we've ever seen it done before?
Yeah, for me personally, there isn't a game that I've watched or a practice that I've watched that I didn't see something. Mm-hmm. And when I mean that, like, I could be watching a Bantam team practice or my buddy's kids team practice, and I will see something that I'm like, geez, you know what? Maybe that's I could tweak that drill and turn it into something else, or you see something a player does. Or when it comes to the coaches in the NHL, like the way they're going with the matchups or a way a team plays, there's always something to learn, whether it's something you want to do or something you might look at and go, I am never doing that ever. And so I just think every day is just a wonderful opportunity to learn, to get better, to move forward. And the playoffs are just so much fun to watch, especially when you can flip around games, sit back on your couch, rewind plays. It's the intensity of the games and the margin for error. Like, it's just the margin for error is just razor thin. And it's really interesting to see how these games play out. And a lot of these games are going to play out on mindset. And it's who can keep the momentum, who can keep that positive feeling, and then who can recover from a challenge or some adversity that's been thrown at them quickly. And I always think that is a big, big deal in the playoffs, is who can recover quickly from something that did not go their way.
I think that's a great point, especially from the coaching perspective, because I'm watching Florida and Tampa last night. And if I'm putting my own opinion on it, I'm looking at those teams thinking, well, there's no teams in the NHL or no matchup where it's being coached at a higher level than this. I mean, Florida limiting Tampa to like single digit shots for multiple periods of time. And the job John Cooper's done, like, it's just tremendous. But you mentioned adversity. Like, even when a game is coached so well and teams are so disciplined, those two in particular, I don't know, the Bobrovsky save happens, and then it kind of just spirals a little bit, and those teams are suddenly playing just this wide-open brand of hockey. I mean, I guess that's more of a statement than a question, but those two in particular and the ability to adapt, like, are you seeing what you just kind of laid out through the coaching jobs that those two have done and are doing currently?
Those guys are unbelievable, and both, like, I'm pretty prejudiced here because they're both very good friends of mine. Like, you know, when I... And you know, give me some grace here. When you see the amount of coaching changes that go on in this game, it's really interesting to me that one of the top teams in the league for a very long time has had one coach, and they've had their ups and downs along the way. But Coop has done a fabulous job, and how he has not won the Jack Adams Award just baffles me. It baffles me. And then on the other hand, like, Paul Maurice was the guy who gave me my first shot as a coach. I was an assistant coach with the Toronto Marlies with him. And Paul has been everywhere. He's had his ups and his downs. People have counted him out. And he's one of the best coaches in the game. And his that team there, it is the team that is built perfectly for Paul Maurice. Got a wee bit of swagger, and they are a handful to handle. And that is a great series to watch. And that series will definitely be exactly what I'm talking about here. It's the who can manage the adversity in the game. And I think both teams are really, really well equipped to do that. They've got a vast amount of experience, and they've got unbelievable staffs behind that bench.
Well, we really appreciate all your insight tonight, Dallas. I noticed over your, I think it's over your right shoulder, the Toronto street names. So I know you got a little bit of love for the Toronto street names over your right shoulder on your wall. So
yeah, and over my left, it's the Vancouver.
Okay, I was trying to guess, but I haven't been out to Vancouver, but I noticed a couple familiar-looking ones. So you're one of those teams might win the cup, and you've got a bit of 50%
chance. Dallas got it covered.
Dallas got it covered.
That's right. We have great friends in both places. We still own a home in Toronto that is actually occupied by a Toronto Maple Leaf right now.
Can you tell us which one?
Absolutely not.
Interesting.
A little violation of privacy.
That's right.
Well, we appreciate what you can tell us tonight. Thanks so much for jumping on. Hopefully we can chat down the road. It's going to be a lengthy playoff stretch ahead.
Anytime. Have a great evening.
Thanks to you as well. Dallas Eakins, that was a really great insight. Of course, former head coach Edmonton Anaheim with Marlies, now coaching over in the German League. And a little Toronto Vancouver love. I was trying to get which city that was, but you know, I've never been to Vancouver, so
you got to make your way out there.
Okay, as we mentioned, lots of hockey on tonight. Boston, Toronto up next after us. LA, Edmonton, part of the doubleheader there at 10 o'clock. Those are on SportsCenter. If you're looking for Vegas and Dallas, not Dallas Eakins, the Dallas Stars, 9:30 on Sportsnet 360. The Blue Jays are taking on Kansas City at 7 o'clock. That's on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet 1, which leads us into a couple best bets for tonight. We could go to a couple things. We mentioned off the top, Addison Barge is going to make his MLB debut tonight, the Blue Jays and the Royals game 3. He's going to be 8th in the lineup, playing kind of a hybrid outfield role. Looks like maybe starting left field tonight.
Yeah, with Kiermaier going to the IL, it seems like that would be the spot that would open up. I mean, Dalton Varsho get some time in center field. And Barger out there in left is what I imagine is going to happen. I'm sure you'll find a way to, you know, bet on Addison Barger having a smashing.
I've been looking for his name to pop up on a book, but
success
not yet.
It'll be there eventually, I'm sure. Yeah, hitting 8 tonight. Yariel Rodriguez and Alec Marsh is the matchup in Kansas City. Of course, the Blue Jays dropping the game last night. So 1-1 start to the series. You know, I'm a fan of Yariel Rodriguez. I'm excited to watch him pitch tonight. This Alec Marsh guy is a bit of an unknown, but he's been really good this year. 3-0, the Royals have won all 4 of his starts so far. So, yeah, looking at about a coin flip, minus 110 aside, give or take, on those two. But an interesting pitching matchup. And, yeah, maybe I'm more interested in the Barger props if we get them.
I just got the Barger prop, 870 to hit a home run. So that's a little tidbit. But, okay. My best bet tonight is a little parlay. It's the turn the vibes around parlay because we kind of need that. A bit of a negative media cycle around a couple folks, including Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Mitch Marner. So turn the vibe around. Vladdy home run, Marner goal. Everybody's happy. Plus 1,700 tonight. I'm also going to throw in JVR, who's going to be slotting into the lineup tonight as a revenge play. He remembers what it's like to lose as a Maple Leaf, so he might want to try to do that. That's plus 550. And then, yes, as I mentioned, just found Barger home run plus 870 in your MLB debut. Why not?
A lot of juicy props there from you, Ailish. I like the JVR one plus 550. That Bruins power play has been good. Like, it's had some success, but the names are not exactly the most familiar or the most threatening. So maybe JVR can plant himself in front of that goal and tip one home or bang in a rebound. I'm going to Dallas Vegas. We didn't talk about it much with Dallas, but a big one for the Stars. They got to bounce back after losing the first game of the series on home ice. I think it comes down to whether Ottinger will prove it or not, that he's going to give them competent goaltending. Until he puts up a zero or has a really good start, I'm going to expect goals in this series. So Vegas, Dallas over 6 is my pick tonight. And I mentioned Sergei Bobrovsky's save last night. There won't be a better one in these playoffs. Price didn't change at all. Not that it should on one game, but Bobrovsky to win the Conn Smythe, 25-1. Florida looks great, but Florida is, they're just eating each other. And the one guy that's standing out is Sergei Bobrovsky. I love that, and I love that Florida is in the position that they're in.
Maybe helps if the Sam Bennett injury takes a little longer than it might have been projected. Okay, we'll take a quick break. Stick with us on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're going to talk to Kristen Shilton, and Hockey Central's up next on Sportsnet.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590. The Fan ahead of Leafs, Bruins, and a bunch of action across the network. From Scotiabank Arena, we get to hear from Kristen Shilton joining us from ESPN. Kristen, how's it going? Thanks for jumping on with us.
I'm doing well, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Have you seen William Nylander on the ice?
We are on full Nylander watch, but no update as of yet. Haven't taken the ice just yet, but we will know in a few minutes whether or not he is going to be participating as he did at morning skate today.
Okay, I know it's probably been a funny one. Everyone's asking you and asking for tweets, so you'll have to let us know if you have eyes on him while we're chatting, because I think that's been major storyline and obviously a weird one too with the uncertainty of it all, but we'll put that one on pause for a bit, because a bigger story that's kind of been, I guess, percolating here is Mitch Marner and his name in the media. And I wonder, because, you know, you're a bit of an outsider perspective now, even though you were once an insider perspective with this team, but you know Marner and his development. Like, how do you view Mitch Marner in the playoffs when you look at this sample size and, I guess, the broader sample size of him being a Maple Leaf?
Yeah, it's so tricky. And it's not at all surprising to me that Marner already is being judged the way that he is, because it's just what fans want to see their stars be stars, right? And so does a team. This is the time of year where it's all about tangible results, right? Like, if it's game 36 of the regular season, maybe you note that, like, hey, this guy's details in the defensive zone, like, look at how great it is, and it's having this huge, you know, impact on, you know, X, Y, and Z for the team overall. But, you know, you only get up to seven games here. Like, you have such a short window of time to have an impact. And that's where I think the criticism comes from, is that people want to see that impact on the score sheet. They want to see the points and the goals. And that's what isn't happening for Marner right now. And I think that that's just the root of the criticism, is that they just want to see those numbers pop. They want to see him be a star. And so far, it's not happening. And speaking of stars, William Nylander does not appear to be on the ice, guys. So it does not look like he will be in the lineup for game three. We can get into that later then.
Yeah, let's circle back there later, because it's important to talk about, you know, that absence, how it's been dealt, how it's going to affect everything moving forward here. But the Marner thing is very, very interesting, continues to be very interesting. Now, there's a lot of series left. He could be the star of stars tonight, and we could be completely reversing this sort of conversation. But this is a little different in that, yeah, this is coming on the heels of a switch to the lineup where, yeah, he's not promised to play with Austin Matthews anymore. Maybe Austin Matthews looks better as a playoff contributor without him. Are there legitimate learnings to take away from this? The fact that, you know, Marner isn't playing with Matthews right now, and Matthews is playing well, and Marner is struggling. Is there something real here? And it is on Marner to get out of this, but when you look big picture and where this team might go and what Austin Matthews might need in the future, like, do we find out something about the Maple Leafs this year with what's going on with Mitch Marner?
You know, I think it's an interesting question, because you never want to think that a player's success is going to be tied to singularly who he's playing with, especially not a player of Marner's caliber, who you expect to be able to drive his own line and to be that player who is elevating those around him. I mean, and that's not to discredit, you know, say that Max Domi or Tyler Bertuzzi are passengers on that line, but Austin Matthews is the star of the line, and he's obviously he's the one who's driving it. And that's what you need from Marner, is you need him to be that player for you. And if he can't do that, if he needs to be with Matthews, if he needs to have that support with him, I mean, that's just making you too top heavy as a team. You need to have that talent spread out, and you need your talent to be able to perform at a certain level where you can trust them to do that. And if Marner is struggling with, you know, it seems like almost wherever he's been lately, at least, and I don't want to say struggling in the sense of, oh, like, it doesn't look like he's playing well. It's just, it's not, again, it's the results are not necessarily there the way that you would want them to be. If you're the Leafs, and if you're obviously a team that's trying to win in the postseason, especially. So it's always the breaking case of emergency button when Keith goes back to his, Matthews Marner connection, and it's worked and it's not worked. But even if Marner, let's say, goes out and has a great game tonight, the way that Matthews had a great game on Monday, it's not enough to have one great game either. You've got to do it again and again and again. And I think if Marner can, pick it up here a little bit, just get some output, I think a lot of that criticism is going to let up. And I do think, even though the guys say, oh, we don't look at social media, we don't know, their family, their friends, they're telling them what people are saying. And, even if they're not telling them, when you're, getting that support being like, don't listen to the critics, you're playing great, it doesn't help either.
We're chatting with Kristen Shilton from ESPN ahead of Leafs, Bruins, and Nylander not taking warm-ups ahead of Game 3. So obviously Mitch Marner kind of becomes that guy that everyone, as we just talked about in the media or whatever, gets the blame. So is there a Bruins equivalent to that if the series doesn't end well? Because they've lost a couple bodies this year. I don't know if the expectations were as high as they previously were. They have great coaching. They had a great regular season last year. And I wonder if there is that face. Is it Brad Marchand? Is it the head coach? Is it kind of a free roll or house money this time around if the playoffs aren't a smashing success for Boston?
That's one where, the captain, you think about Brad Marchand, does it fall on him? But at the same time, you're talking, I think he's like 37. Yeah. He's been at this a long time. He's on your second line. It's not the same situation of, of course, from, you still expect for him to play well. And you, when the Bruins don't, he's going to face a certain amount of criticism there. But it's almost like their defense has been, really what's come under scrutiny. You look at, Charlie McAvoy, Hampus Lindholm, are they doing enough? Are they, have they been able to mirror that sort of big, bad Bruin mentality? And then now you look at the Bruins back end, they're going to miss Andrew Peak. They've got Mason Lahari, who's going to come up and play with Charlie McAvoy on that top pairing. And that in itself is something that, the Bruins have been a really good defensive team, and it's something that has been a hallmark for them, that physicality, that bruising energy. But I don't think that there's necessarily one guy anymore that you can hang anything on and say, offensively, oh, this is the guy that's got to score that goal for us. I mean, Pastrnak does so much, and he's going to play well. Already you've seen in this series, he's going to, find his openings against the Leafs, but I would think it's really their defense that is, what would garner more of the speculation or more of the criticism if things start to kind of fall apart here, depending on how the series goes.
Yeah, I guess that's what culture does, right? Like, it insulates everyone. That team seems highly protected within that culture and everything that Patrice Bergeron built and left behind. That doesn't mean, however, that the clock isn't running out. You mentioned Brad Marchand's age. I mean, he's going to be the captain of this team for a couple years at the very least, but there's no promise of success, and maybe that culture will be tested if it doesn't go well in the series and maybe beyond that. Austin Matthews obviously had a breakout moment in Game 2. People were calling it one of his best games ever. I'm not sure I'm going that far, but he had two huge moments. And yeah, the reason why the Maple Leafs earned a split in many ways, along with the line mates, and more specifically, Max Domi with a big goal. But are you seeing a change in Austin Matthews? Are there different things to pick up when you're watching him compared to maybe last year, at least years previous? Like, if Matthews is making a step forward or taking a step forward and becoming more for this moment, in what ways have you seen that?
Well, I thought that Jim Montgomery actually had a really good assessment yesterday when he talked about Matthews getting in more on the forecheck and how tenacious he's been on pucks. And that's what makes him the most dangerous man on the ice. And I think that's where I've seen the biggest change in Matthews, probably over the past 2 years, but especially this year. I said after, the regular season ended, I thought this was one of his better years overall. And people immediately were like, no, you're wrong. But I thought that what made it that was that he put up his points and he had a very nearly historic, he almost hits that milestone. But to me, what's different about Matthews is that he's no longer, you know, he doesn't shy away from getting involved physically. I mean, he was tied for the league or the league, he was tied for the game high in hits. And on Monday, he had 6 hits, probably, you know, part of why he's taking the rest today and not taking skate, because he's really using his body and he's being physical. And there's not that just kind of sticking his, you know, putting his stick in, trying to get a puck out. Like, he's using his whole frame. And that was always, I thought, a knock on him in the earlier years of his career, and something that coaches would say about him was just, you know, use the whole body. Like, you're a big guy. Like, you have that ability. And I think that's where I've seen him grow and change, is just really not being, you know, so afraid. And he's obviously faced injuries before. He's had problems, and that, you know, can make players maybe a little bit more hesitant to really be physical. But I think in his way, Matthews has expanded what he does well by not just being a guy who's, you know, waiting for the pass. You know, he really wants to be involved in all those aspects of the game. And that's where the difference comes from, in why his performance, I think, was so compelling the other night, was that, you know, it seems like, even when Marchand said it was a nothing play, what happened with Matthews, there was nothing there, but you can make something out of it when you are as smart as Matthews is, when you're as talented as he is. And those are just the ways that I think that he has continued to grow, is that it's not, you know, throughout that entire game, he was doing things that you could see tangibly were having a real impact on the Leafs in a positive way. But it wasn't just necessarily that he was, you know, scoring goals or, you know, blowing you away with, you know, some stick handling move. It was really, I thought, just the pressure and the intensity and the desperation that he brought with every shift and in his actions was really impressive.
We're chatting with Kristen Chilton of ESPN. Looks like the Leafs will go with an identical lineup from game 1, 2, and 3 as they go into a series tiebreaker at this moment, a game 3 in Scotiabank Arena. So that means no William Nylander, as you confirmed for us. So I wonder for you, just reporter side, how this has been for you to navigate, trying to figure out what's going on with William Nylander, the cone of secrecy, seeing him or not seeing him physically on the ice, maybe having press conference at the same time as open skates. Like, what has it been like behind the scenes, trying to just do your job as a reporter to figure out what's going on with William Nylander as he continues to not be available for the Maple Leafs lineup, but be on the ice and be in Boston and not back in Toronto, where you think maybe you could be getting more rehabilitation if it's an injury? Like, how has this been for you?
It's very odd. It's been an odd series in that sense, because there has been so much secrecy. There was all the goalie secrecy on the Bruins side, and now this whole thing with Nylander, where he's out there, he's on a line, he's taking brushes, he looks good. I mean, you're watching him, you know, the other day in Boston, you watch him today, and he's in a regular line today. And it just seems like Nylander and the player that we're used to seeing, but then he stays out late and he's continuing to do the extra work. And if he can manage to not only get through a whole skate and do this extra work, like if something was really bothering him, wouldn't you want him doing less to try to, you know, rest him up and get him back out there? But he's doing an increased amount of work and then not playing. So that's the other thing for me, is that it's 2 days now, or twice at least, that we've seen him where he's doing all of this extra work, and that sort of doesn't really jive with what we've seen in the past from players who you know, are rehabilitating, or they're trying to rest up so they can get back into the game. You would think that's what they want, but I digress on that front. From a reporter perspective, you know, the gamemanship I can't really speak to, but I think it is a strange situation, and I don't know if we'll find out the full details of everything that is going on, even if Nylander is able to come back. We may not find out the full story until, you know, the Leafs season does come to an end, but it's definitely been a strange storyline for me to keep up with.
Last one for you here on the Leafs, Kristen. You understand the recent history of this team as well as anyone, covering this team as closely as you did and continue to now. So that means you understand what they were trying to do in the Dubas era. You knew what the Shanna plan was all about. And now we've seen this pivot to Brad Treliving and how this team is going to conduct business differently. We've kind of, you know, we have some breadcrumbs to chase. Do we know the complete extent of what Tre Living is trying to do and wants to do? Not yet. But what we've seen here through, I suppose, 11 months, like, has he earned, in your mind, proof of concept? What he's trying to do is better for this organization, or is at least a path worth traveling down?
You know, it's something where I think this summer will be a very interesting time for the Leafs, you know, regardless, well, I shouldn't say completely regardless, but in, you know, short of them, you know, winning the cup, there is going to be a real period of reflection, I think, on Tre Living, because to me so far, it seems, you know, like he's gotten a bit more of what the Leafs were looking for. I think that they're, at least over these first two playoff games, I think that they're the physical presence that they've been lacking in seasons past has definitely been there. I think they were less one-dimensional in the regular season. They had obviously their ups and downs. They had the, you know, there were some issues that cropped up. But I think that the transactions that Tre Living has made have had the impact, at least so far. It's only been two games in the playoffs, but there's been, at least as you say, in terms of proof of concept, like he wanted to make the team tougher, and it seems like they have bought into that and been able to show it pretty consistently. So, I mean, in that way, it's a positive, but this, they've just, so much of what Tre Living has done so far hinges on, you know, what the Leafs do over the next week, and then the week after, and the week after. Like, this is the time where we're going to judge him. And over the first two games, I would say, yeah, it's working out well, but that's only, you know, such a small sample size so far. So I think that this summer will be a real time for the organization to pause and reflect on what they do accomplish here, and whether this is the direction that they, you know, are happy continuing to go in. Like, is this going to be a team that doesn't just prioritize so much the offensive side, but I mean, defensively, it's been a bit of a struggle, and there's going to have to be some serious changes in that department for this team. You know that, because they, sometimes it feels like they're hanging by a thread on the back end and what they're doing. So that's where I think the biggest points of emphasis will be. But the full grading of Tre Living, I think, will come once we see how the Leafs get out of this series and whether they can potentially, you know, make a bit of a run here this spring.
Last one for you. You've been very generous with your time, so we appreciate it. I think everyone who covers the NHL, everyone who watches the NHL on a nightly basis, at least beyond one team, has a moment during the year where they're like, oh, that team's winning the Stanley Cup. Look at, well, like, what you just saw, maybe a eureka moment where you're just like, wow, their A game is better than everyone else's. What I'm watching right now is special. Have you had that moment this year, like the best version of the best team that you've seen while covering the NHL this season?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if I've had that eureka moment or that exact, you know, oh yeah, that team definitely has cup winning potential, because already just through these first few games, I've been watching some of these teams and I'm like, wow, like, did we see that from them in the regular season? But, you know, one team I would say every time that I've been able to watch them closely and really, you know, be able to appreciate what they do so well is the Dallas Stars. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we talk about them enough, but their top line, like Jason Robertson, he's just an absolute star. You look at Rubien's absolute stud. Their back end is fantastic. I love their defense and just their details, the way that they play. They're fast. There's so much to like about them. And I would think that, you know, even if the playoffs didn't exactly start the way that they maybe had expected, it's still, they're just a team that for me, every time that I watched them, I thought that team could go far. And I still, I really enjoy watching them. And, you know, it's kind of the same with Carolina. That's another team where every time you really take a moment to appreciate how good they are, you really have a hard time thinking like, no, this could not be a potential, you know, Stanley Cup clash between those two. It's just from my, you know, regular season observations, that's definitely teams that have stood out.
I know Justin said last one, but the one word answer, what's your Utah name selection?
Oh, from my heart, the Yetis.
Yes, I'm on Team Yeti.
It's like, I think the Utah Ice is probably,
all right.
Utah Ice, or, you know, it's boring. It's not boring. It's not as boring as Utah HC, mm-hmm. But, you know, I like a classic. I'm into the classic names, and Utah Ice, that's pretty classic.
It's going to be fun to see how this all unfolds. Kristen, we appreciate your time tonight. If you're around on Saturday night, Justin and I will be at the rink, so we'll try to say hello if you're still in town, but we appreciate you taking the time tonight and enjoy the action.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Kristen Shelton of ESPN. We brought up the Utah situation because latest 32,000 podcast with our friends, Elliot and Jeff, had a great interview with...
I love the car cast, by the way.
Need
all the car casts.
Car casts?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Elliot's on the drive home. They do a podcast.
Oh, okay. Got it.
My favorite.
Ryan Smith was chatting with Elliot and Jeff talking about the plan for Utah. And he actually brought up a bunch of information, and we only have a couple minutes here, but quickly saying that they're going to have a bracket, a March Madness-style bracket to determine the name and also try to share some of the uniform similarities with the Jazz. And the Jazz have a pretty good style. Quote, if you look at the mountains on the Jazz jersey, I think that kind of breeds a little bit of a color palette naturally. Fresh ice, the whole setup, blue skies. You see that in a dream scenario. There's a Venn diagram where you've got the Jazz and this team, and they can kind of overlap. You can check out the new 32 Thoughts podcast. But with that being said, an 8-team bracket believes to be the following names: Mammoth, Ice, Yetis, Venom, Fury, Blizzard, Outlaws, and HC, or Hockey Club. So if it's a full-on March Madness-style voting scenario, I kind of love it. You're putting it in the hands of the... you could be putting it in the hands of the fans or just people on Twitter, but there's a couple good ones. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, a couple one seeds. Mammoth, one seed for me. Yetis, one seed for me. See if they cross over and meet in the final.
The Outlaws, I think, would be cool. Utah Outlaws.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good, actually, when you say it out loud. What's an outlaw, though?
Arizona, they're kind of outlawed out of Arizona. Yeah,
that's true.
Anyway.
The worst is Venom. Like, can we get Venom out of there?
No,
I think
Venom's too Marvel for me.
I can't have Venom.
Ice is fine.
It's a little
It should be restricted
unambitious.
For the Georgina Ice. Shout out Georgina Ice. Beauties. They should keep the ice just, you know, in honor of them. Hockey Club, HC, some people are kind of leaning into that like it's pretty classic, but that's not how the NHL works. Like, we've got a bunch of names. There's no HCs. So are you kind of going to forge your own path?
There's like a lack of creativity there, but it requires like more creativity. Like, you got to have like a nickname too. If you're the Utah Hockey Club, you know, you got to have something else woven through, even if you want that to be your name.
When he mentions the similarities with the jersey and stuff, I'm picturing something like Ice could be used, Mammoth could be used, Blizzard, but Blizzard and Avalanche, I think, cancel each other out. You can't have the Blizzard versus the Avalanche one night. Anyway, so it'll be fun. We'll see what Ryan Smith says about how this is going to all shake out, but said it's going to be a full-on March Madness bracket. So I love a good bracket challenge. We'll have fun with that. Did you want to quickly touch on our fighting news, our UFC news?
Yeah, our guy Mike Malott.
Our boy.
He's finally got his fight. He was teasing it. He got a text like while he was talking to us, or maybe before, but he wouldn't show us the text. But we know now he's going to fight Gilbert Urbina at a later date. So we know who our guy, Bronny's our guy.
Bronny.
But our number two is Mike Malott, and we know who he's fighting next. So we're looking forward to that.
All right. Big night tonight, of course, as we mentioned. Leafs and Bruins tonight, 7 p.m. L.A. and Edmonton, 10 o'clock. That's a doubleheader on Sportsnet. A little later on, Vegas and Dallas. You can catch it on Sportsnet 360. The Blue Jays are playing the Kansas City Royals tonight at 7. That'll be on Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet 1. Addison Barger getting his MLB debut today. If you missed it, that's a big, big thing for the Blue Jays. They're dealing with some injury concerns, and I think it's a good narrative night. Stop the narrative. Flip it upside down. Vladdy needs a big night. Marner needs a big night. Because right now, things are trending negatively for them.
Dallas Stars, too, need a big night. I mean, everyone loves Dallas. I love Dallas. You love Dallas. Kristen Shelton loves Dallas. If Dallas loses tonight, goes down 0-2 at home to the defending Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, it's going to be tough for all of us to seem even remotely smart when it comes to our hockey analysis. So, big one for everybody tonight in Dallas.
And a big one for Dallas Eakins, too.
Yeah.
Big night for all the Dallases.
I think we know who lives in his house, by the way.
We did kind of do a little
bit. We won't say it, but I think we know.
We figured it out off air, so. And we can't share that with you. Sorry.
It's not
bad about that. It's not that hard. Just think. Okay, folks, that's it for the fan pregame. We'll be back tomorrow on a baby Friday. Have a great night.